Welcome to this week's Casterbus podcast with a K. This is basically the audio from our recent live podcast, which we webcast on YouTube. Unfortunately, we had some sound issues, which means that sound effects don't work so well, and I sound like a Dalek throughout. You may be able to pick up some of the Dalek-y sounds. We now know what the problem was after recording the podcast, which is why I sound absolutely delicious and crisp and pretty much even throughout this podcast, whereas the other guys sound a tiny bit ropey. It was either that or the other guy sounding okay and me sounding like a Dalek throughout. So sit back and enjoy the next 45 minutes of the podcast live discussing The Magician's Apprentice. Go for it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Podcast with a K. My name is Christian Corley, editor of Casterbus.com, and with me are Brian Turnover and James McLean, and this is a podcast live, so let's have a round of applause for that.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, and you may be used to the shtick I'm about to give you now, but then again, we haven't done that many live podcasts, so on the other hand, you may not be aware of what I'm about to say, which basically says that if you're doing this live with us today, you can comment on Twitter or on Hangouts, and interact with us, and we'll talk about what you're saying, and you talk about what we're saying, and we'll mention some people, etc. You can do it in Hangouts, you can do it on Twitter, you can email us, although it might be a bit slower that way. And if you're listening online through iTunes or Audio Boom or on Casterbus, or that's how you normally listen, and you've tuned into this Hangouts just to see what's going on, thinking, OMG, there's no podcast this week. No, don't worry, there is a podcast this week. I'll be taking the audio from the podcast and releasing it as normal, so you're not going to miss anything other than the rare opportunity to meet us directly. That just doesn't come along all that often. Guys, how are you doing?
Yeah, all right.
Brian and James? Yeah. James has actually regenerated due to a freak gin drinking accident and has turned into Morph.
I think you'll find I've morphed.
Indeed. Morphed into plasticine and moved into his pencil box. Isn't that right?
That would be correct.
Okay, so we've got Brian Turnover here as well for this week's podcast. And there's something I want to know, because Brian's obviously in the United States, so James and I were able to watch The Magician's Apprentice on TV as it went out live. Brian's in the USA, so he may have watched it on BBC America or through other means. And, you know, there's people all around the world have watched the first episode of Doctor Who in different ways at different times. Take Australia, okay? In Australia, the episode aired on ABC on Sunday afternoon, on Sunday evening. But if you were particularly keen on watching The Magician's Apprentice in Australia, you could have got up at 5:30 a.m. and watched it as it went out in the UK. As a kind of simultaneous screening. Now, to me, that sounds kind of quite early. What I would probably do is record it and then watch it over breakfast or something like that. But what about you guys? Would you get up at 5:30 a.m., Brian?
Jeez, 5:30 a.m. No, I would wait. I'd watch it in the morning.
Yeah. Moth?
No, I'd wait.
Yeah, okay.
I hate to interrupt, guys, but James, is Christian sounding at all like Davros to you?
Very much like Davros.
Am I really?
Yeah, this is weird. Very.
So, The Magician's Apprentice, the first episode of Doctor Who Series 9. We've all watched it, that's why we're here to discuss it, isn't it, after all? And we're all going to talk about various parts of the episode throughout this week's podcast with a K. Just, you know, when you leave a TV show, you have your initial impression of it and what you liked, what you didn't like so much. So I'm going to open up, first of all, to Brian Turnover. Brian, The Magician's Apprentice, what were you left with at the end? What was your initial impression?
You know, about what I expected. You know, there were going to be some cool moments, and then there were going to be some outrageous moments that were just kind of things I could have lived without kind of thing. I did like the intro on Scarrow. I guessed it was Scarrow because they did a pretty good job of basically doing the War of Attrition, which I thought was kind of neat. Having heard the rumor a long time ago of the Hitler time travel scenario, I knew the kid was going to be Davros, but it was still kind of neat. And then after the intro, things started to kind of go downhill for the most part with slight inclines back along the way. It wasn't a terrible episode, but there were too many dips of things that I just thought, I don't know, didn't work for me. So my initial reaction was really up and down of, oh, that's neat. Oh, no, that's not. Oh, that's neat. No, that's not. So that's basically where I'm at.
And James McLean, what about you? Your initial reaction, please.
Pretty much what he said. It was my concern was the two parties wouldn't feel like it was a bigger story. It would just feel like it would drag more, and it dragged. I liked the beginning. I liked Davros. I enjoyed Missy. I thought Missy was good. I thought Capaldi was good. Everyone was fine. It was just, it felt like someone had inserted a load of pointless deleted scenes that I just didn't want to see.
Yeah,
I felt it would have been better at 40 minutes and they'd cut out a whole large section. The unit, the planes, the meeting the doctor in the past, it was just long, drawn out, needless, diverting. I didn't really, again, I suppose we've got to say we don't know what will happen next week. Next week might change things around, sure. But Capaldi's doctor just seemed to be, I don't know, it just didn't make sense. And it was sort of rehashing the same sort of things again, you know, that his last, final, ultimate, deadly, dangerous, ultimate, last, final hour, which he feels a bit bad about, which was sort of done in End of Time. Yeah. So, yeah, it was okay, but I think my biggest issue was I was bored about, by the time they found the doctor, I was bored. I was interested later on, and I was interested before that. I liked the hand mines. I thought that was cool. But for a large section, I was thinking, this just doesn't need to be here. It doesn't even feel like it should be part of this story. Unless you're a fan who just loves all these little characters, why are they here? You didn't need to see Kate Stewart. She was, you know, she wasn't part of the story. I didn't need to see Clara having to take command and have to be whisked over like James Bond to UNIT. I didn't need to go into the past to see the Doctor's, you know, fun moments. The guitar and the tank just seemed stupid and pointless and overtried. And even actually the saucer, not being a saucer but being on the planet, again, it's like, why? Well, you know, you're just putting stuff in to try and seem clever, to sort of have to constantly try to surprise the audience, as if you're not confident enough. The audience will just be able to enjoy the story without constantly having to switch things around every 5 minutes, you know. And yeah, you've got things like the Shadow Proclamation, you've got the Moldavarium. You think, well, again, do we really need those? No. It just felt like it was too indulgent for its own good. And if it had been 40 minutes, well, I know it was 40 minutes, but I mean, if the two-part had been condensed, should I say, maybe it'd have been a more cleaner, crisper story. So, yeah, I'm like Brian. There's bits in it I really liked, and I loved the set design. I loved the design of Skyro. I loved I thought Missy was really good in it. I enjoyed her. But it's just the way it's written and the way it was constructed was just felt messy.
I enjoyed the character of Davros as well. I thought he... Yes. I thought he was played very well. I loved the subdued. I loved how he was kind of hunched over, like he was definitely on his deathbed. But I have to agree with a lot of what you said there, because I was actually just speaking with another friend this morning. We were talking about a lot of the same, like Kate Stewart. Basically, Kate Stewart was there to be the old-fashioned companion, the one to ask questions. Here she is, the leader of a big military organization, and she's relying on Clara to give her all of the answers to the things that she needs to know, instead of sit there and say, okay, team, what are we doing? This is what we got. Let's move in action. No, she's like, what is this? What's going on? What's happening? I don't know. Why am I here? Who knows? I felt Moffat, and I'm tired of it, quite frankly, but I feel Moffat writes things grand so that we will sit there and he's trying to create memories for us. The Doctor on a tank playing a guitar in medieval England. Mm. Like, that's so great. It's so doctory, isn't it? It's so awesome. Well, you know, it's not. My friend and I were actually discussing it, and we thought this is the kind of stuff that you would see in a bad Doctor Who fan film. The people who don't think things through. What would the Doctor really do? Instead, they sit there and they go, well, this thing would be awesome. We'll do that because it's so silly. And it's like, it's so out of place. But also, he's failing to understand that the things that we take from the show, the memories that we have from the show, the past, even the past couple of years, are not the things that you write over grandiose, over the top, you know, wacko. They are the brilliant subtleties that just somehow became these grandiose, wacko things to us somehow, some way. Like, they were never designed to make us feel that way. And when I was watching it, I just kept feeling, if the Doctor somehow had landed in Woodstock and tried to hide himself there and live like 3 weeks just being a wacko and playing guitar on stage there, I could have actually bought that. I could have rolled with that. But medieval England, riding in on a tank, playing a guitar, I was bored. It just didn't do anything for me. And Clara once again being the Doctor while the Doctor wasn't being the Doctor and Kate being nothing, it was boring. Missy was cool. Davros was cool. I agree with you on all the set designs. And another thing that I keep saying about this era is the cinematography was amazing. So lots of good stuff in it, but lots of bad stuff too.
I think there's another problem there that, again, I'm wary that we're going to be labeled Moffat haters, and I'm very wary that I'm going to set the detonator off in Brian Terranova to go on one of his little Stephen rants. But I kind of feel, again, that there's a lot of ego in there, or a lot of fandom, a lot of fanishness, and I don't know which it is. As if he's sort of gone, you know, Genesis of the Daleks had one of the most quintessential moments since the last quintessential moment, which was the beginning of the show, that I had to get involved in. So I've got to sort of get involved in this moment myself and either try and better it or rewrite it or make it, you know, something that connects to me. And the problem with the show, which we've said since Davis, has been that it constricts its own bubble rather than expanding it. And in this show, this episode, the bubble of Doctor Who just became really tight. Not only did you sort of have, across all time and space, you know, the Moldavarium, Shadow Proclamation, Earth, Sisterhood of Khan, so, you know, the universe gets quite small for this episode. And considering, are they in the same time sphere? Are they same continuity? Are they across different time planes? There's that. And then on top of that, you've now got this whole thing about the Doctor meeting Davros as a kid. Now, again, unless this is explained in a more clever way next episode, everything suddenly becomes very small. And there's actually an article that I'm writing at the moment. It sort of links into this, is obviously how much of a fingerprint do you give the Doctor in the universe, that he is now linked to not just the Daleks, not just the genesis of the Daleks, but now the genesis of Davros.
Yeah.
And everything just becomes too insular, and that just really bugs me.
It's actually, it's how much of a fingerprint do you give Moffat, is the thing, because I agree with you. That was the one thing I thought, because next week, I fully expect to see that if the Doctor didn't run away from Davros when he was a kid, then Davros probably would have grown up to be this good person. But the Doctor left him there to fend for himself, and that's why he became this evil bastard. You know, and it's like, so once again, Moffat makes one of his characters go back into our past and make them be responsible for the things that we know. And it's just kind of, like you said, self-indulgent. It could be different next week. Fine. Hopefully it is. But I really feel it's going to be, hey, guess what, Doctor? You created me. Oh, okay. You know what? Is the Doctor God? We talk about him being the lonely God. But is he God now in Moffat's era? Is that what's happening? Did he create everything?
It's moments like this that I'm put in mind of Russell T. Davies' maxim, and also Philip Hinchcliffe's, of reducing the reliance on continuity and past characters. You know, with Philip Hinchcliffe, obviously Russell T. Davies rebooted Doctor Who and wanted to be very careful about what old elements he brought back and to what extent Philip Hinchcliffe, on the other hand, had, other than Genesis of the Daleks and Revenge of the Cybermen, which he hadn't commissioned. They were in place before he became producer. There's those, you know, these are opportunities to create new continuity, not rely on old continuity. And I wonder, do you think, with the medieval guy having the Dalek head, do you think that the Daleks and Davros know what the other is doing or not?
Well, perhaps they're not. I mean, is what you've raised is a good point. Maybe we'll find next week they're not.
I was thinking that they're not myself, but I do agree with Christian. It was kind of like that. Why did that guy need to be a Dalek plant? The other thing is, too, why do the Dalek plants have to have a Dalek eye stalk stick out of their forehead? Even just a blue, like, Davros eye there would have been better to me. I think it's, like, quite a lame effect. It really,
yes,
really just isn't cool at all. You know, there are better ways to do Dalek plants, I think, and that just doesn't work for me.
It still feels to me as if they haven't learned anything at all yet, that the same mistakes and the same tropes from the last 10 years are still perpetuating. And that disappoints me a bit. I mean, the Daleks having to go and find their companions is a callback to Asylum of the Daleks. And I don't really buy this, the Doctor disappearing from time. For someone who does such complex plots, he relies on these very simplistic linear approaches to time, which is weird. Because he loves doing complex time travel, and then he'll do this.
Well,
from history, or we'll locate him in history. There'll be several points where we can locate him. You're looking for one specific direction, and I don't know. It just feels messy and unneeded. I know it sounds old-fashioned, and I don't mean this in a sort of conservative way, but back to basics seems to be a very rational approach to get rid of so many of the problems I see in it. I was going to say, if you just had the Doctor and Clara again on the TARDIS, I know you'd have to rewrite a lot of the way the story opens, but you could still do a lot of what the core of that story could still be there, but you'd get to it so much faster. Even if you'd had Missy coming and find the Doctor and Clara, and not through some long, dull embellishment of planes. I mean, yeah, there's bits of that which were fun and interesting. I mean, the Missy scene was great, but it just feels so out of place. It just feels so, you know, you end up, if it was a book, you'd be still asking, what the hell is this story about? I thought it was about Davros, and for ages it's not. You know, you set your prologue up about Davros, and then it just seems to meander away into this weird indulgence that you just don't need. And I'm sure, I mean, I've looked today on some of the reviews, and a lot of people loved this episode, so I know I'm a minority, but the people I was watching it with were the same. They were looking at the time, you know, when they're in medieval time, everyone was bored. So I don't know.
You know, for the past 5 years, I've found myself, instead of enjoying an episode or outright not enjoying an episode, I found that my new kind of norm has become what are the things that I enjoy from the episode. And there were aspects, like we talked about with Missy and Davros, of this episode that I thought were great, and there were certain concepts that I thought were great. But anymore, I don't necessarily completely enjoy an episode or completely dislike an episode. Well, that's not true. Some episodes are complete tankers, if you ask me. But it's odd that my perspective of the show has changed. Rather than going, damn, that was awesome, I want to watch that again, it's just kind of, oh, I'd like to see that Davros scene again, you know? But one thing that you had mentioned with, you know, him kind of doing that whole, you know, the Doctor search through time and so on, and the Doctor's not supposed to be found, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. It's like, Moffat creates things and then drops them and hopes that we'll forget them too. Because, I mean, when the 11th Doctor went to go ahead and erase himself from time everywhere, that never worked. It never did anything. Like, he did it, he erased himself, and then everybody was still knowing who he was and still looking for him. And that was all I could think about in this scene here when, you know, the snake guy, whatever his name was, went around asking everybody about the Doctor, and everybody knew him, and it was just kind of like, oh, okay, all right, I guess we're back to that then. All right, and I understand that Davros knows him, fine. I can buy that you didn't erase yourself from everybody. But even the Daleks, you know, like, what was it, the last episode we saw, Clara, or whatever, that one Dalek episode when they made the Daleks forget who he was, that was forgotten. You know, I don't know, it's just, it's so hard to watch these stories. They talk about, years ago, TV used to be, it used to have a magic reset button for every episode. Forget what came before it, now there's a magic reset button, because we're going to do whatever we want to do in this particular episode. And then TV got away from that. What happened in the past was important to what was happening in the present. It seems like Moffat has a magic reset button for the things that he did that didn't work. Rather than go ahead and write a fix for them, he's going to go ahead and just forget them.
No, I think maybe it's you guys have had your turn, obviously. I think I'd probably say that, you know, I enjoyed it and I enjoyed watching it, but did The Magician's Apprentice really, really do it for me as a season opener? I think stylistically it looks fantastic, but I think there is a case that there is a lot more there's not enough substance, basically, to looking so good. You know, the intro was really, really strong. The cliffhanger, not so strong, you know, dramatic. I'm not so keen on the build-up. I'm not so keen on Capaldi's begging. The Essex stuff is entertaining and it's a diversion, but, you know, it looks good. It's obviously, again, like the rest of it, it's had money spent on it, but did the Essex thing need to be there? I don't really think it did. And you know, when you know, initial reaction, yeah, I enjoyed it, but, you know, on reflection, it's just an episode that looks really good and owes a hell of a lot to Peter Capaldi, Michelle Gomez, and Julian Bleacher's Davros. I think without those three, this episode really would not have worked. We barely saw the Daleks, and, you know, it was good to see them moving about, but a little bit annoyed by the fact that old special weapons didn't get anything to do again. Perhaps he could have been brought into action for the TARDIS removing aspect. Oh, do you know, and, you know, this is one of these things, you know, we're not sitting here slagging off Doctor Who because we don't like Doctor Who. We sat here discussing an episode that we had good expectations for. Not too high, not too low, just good expectations for as a season opener. And we're just finding that for us, I think it didn't quite deliver what it should have done. So, you know, beautifully produced, good dialogue, plot is all over the place. Which is why that's why I'm sticking to my 6 out of 10 for this. How it develops in the second part, it might be absolutely superb and raise, run off into a storming culmination. And if that's the case, then it's a slow starter that builds up into a great thing. And that's absolutely fine by me. But I'm struggling with the cliffhanger. It's not convincing. The threat in a room full of Daleks should be considerable, but because we've seen companions dying so often in Moffat's Doctor Who, the death in inverted commas of Missy and Clara are in no way convincing, really.
You know, I keep hoping that part two is going to tell us that they're still in Missy's Matrix life, because I am just hoping that a lot of the things that happened since that last two-parter just didn't really happen. But hey, that's me.
I mean, I liked some of the dialogue about Missy. I thought that was quite fun with her extrapolating the difference between Time Lords and people. That was nicely written. And yeah, there's a couple of, you know, quite poetic lines in there as well. But I don't know. He's just it just sometimes comes across as smug. I don't know. And again, I mean, I know I've said this before, but, you know, the Doctor pleading with Davros, you've got to have a really good reason for this episode to justify it. Or is that just me? It just didn't look right. It just seemed...
Yeah, I would have thought he would have saved him, not left him, you know, absolutely.
But, I mean, when he was there, the Davros pleading with him not to kill Clara, and you just...
Oh.
I mean, Doctors, unless, as I say, it's part of a plan, the Doctor's so old now, he knows very well that of all the people to plead to, that's the one thing you don't do to Davros.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just felt so bitty.
I think that the best thing about having Julian Bleach back as Davros is that it gave him something to really, really act with. You know, with the Stolen Earth and Journey's End, it wasn't really about Davros. Although, you know, obviously Davros was there. Davros was coming back for the first time in modern Doctor Who since the reboot, relaunch. He had little to do. It was about the Doctor and the Doctor's friends, whereas in this, it was about Davros. And for someone who I've said on the podcast before, who is aggrieved, as I am, that Doctor Who's really more about the companions than it is about the villains these days, that was really, really refreshing for me. I really enjoyed it. And Bleach was brilliant, again, as Davros, better than last time.
I enjoyed it. I just, again, feel it was almost as if it was trying to compete or trying to be as if he wanted to do his own Genesis of the Daleks. And I don't know. It just felt like it was mining a bit, mining continuity a little bit, which I know is one of the reasons fans do really love it, because, you know, fans love to see it continuity explored. I do as well. But it was almost like he took that one line, about if you would you kill a child, and then based his whole story around that using Davros. And I don't know, it's just so literal. It's got that sort of fan, I suppose fans would call it fan magic to it, but I just don't think it needed to be highlighted in such an obvious way. As I say, unless next week does something very different to actually change some of the things and actually make him meeting Davros as a kid something that was planned, something that had reason behind it, that his pleading had something planned and had reason behind it. But I don't know. I just feel, you know, it frustrates me. As a writer, you'd think you'd want to try and get from point A to point B smoothly, and this episode did anything but try and get to point B smoothly. You know, the audience starts off with this interesting Davros element. Then after the sting, we have this new guy wandering around looking for the Doctor who can't find him, and then's told to go and find him through his companions. And you think, well, why wasn't he told that in the first place, if that's the obvious route and it's the route that's been done before? And then you go to the companions looking for the Doctor. No, companion looking for the person who might be the Doctor who isn't, who is actually looking for the Doctor. Then together they go and look for the Doctor on a space station, which isn't a space station, is actually a pretend space station on a planet where there's Daleks who shoot his friends while the Doctor pleads to Davros. And if you look at it like that, you think, how did you pitch that to yourself or to anyone else? That's just like a really messed up construction there. Is it just me? Is it
people out there? No, I agree with that.
Viewers.
It did seem like the long way around to do something, absolutely. And also, yeah, like another point you bring up is, you know, just to get the companions there, just to shoot the companions. You know, watching Missy die again, and then watching Clara die, there was never a, oh my god, moment from me. It was just, great. Like, what happened to them then? What's going to happen next week? Because obviously they're not dead. You know, obviously there was no harm done. Like, what's going to happen here? You know, or is there some miracle that the two of them are actually dead and the Doctor has to go back in time and alter time to save their lives? Is that what's going to happen? Because really, Moffat kills far too many people just to bring them back 2 seconds later. There's no threat to it anymore. There's no feeling behind it for me. So aside from having our time wasted by this person who should have known what they were doing since Davros was telling them what to do in the first place, killing people, even the Doctor by this point should see, oh, wow, you shot my friends with a laser. Well, guess what? You know, I watched the Brigadier Cyberman killed Missy, and she's still alive, so I guess nothing really matters. No lasers kill anybody in this show anymore.
I have two words to add to that. Vortex manipulators.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. There's no, you're just sitting here, you can't sit there and go, oh my god, I hope they're okay. It's more so, wow, I wonder where they went.
Mind you, if yesterday's Abbey Road photo shoot is anything to go by, perhaps what's actually happened to Clara is that she's been replaced by a Canadian Jenna Coleman lookalike.
That would be great.
Yeah, yeah, like a Wilhelmina Shears. That's one for all you Beatles and Paul is Dead fans out there.
It's so horrible, isn't it, when your two main choices are that they weren't killed and it was the Vortex manipulators, because obviously we've never seen anyone disintegrated by Dalek guns, which was an interesting effect.
Bad Wolf.
Yeah. Do you in Bad Wolf?
Yeah. Rose Tyler.
It was a right. teleporter, but yeah.
Yeah, it was a teleporter.
But but there's no one who...
Similar effect.
Well, they're slaved, aren't they? The manipulators are slaves at the moment, so...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but, you know, is that the best... That's the better resolution than Brian's suggestion that he goes and rewrites everything, which would be incredibly tedious. But I was just thinking, when I was watching it, if they'd stripped this back, which I know is like our policy here for every review, why can't you strip it back? If you stripped this back and had made it a single 45-minute finale and actually had, at the end of the series, the Doctor having to go and meet Davros over a terrible thing that he had done and actually played it like American drama does occasionally and sort of almost bottle episoded it and just had him and Davros, that could have been something really tense, something really focused, and something very different to what we keep getting. But this feels very much like compounded bits of what we've had before, which is why I say it's not as new and fresh as I was kind of hoping it would be.
I do. I mean, I agree. Having the Doctor go back in time and rewrite their deaths would be boring, especially since you're essentially writing in deaths just for the sake of undoing those deaths. But I also think that having them use their slave vortex manipulators is boring, too. Like, why do you need to kill them, period? You could have thought of something more clever to do with these characters. By now, Moffat should know that killing or fake killing, pretend killing, overkilling, repeat killing of characters is done, boring, dead, and over. And just let's try and do something a little bit more interesting with these people. I don't know. I found the more that I think about this episode, the more that I'm sitting here going, I really don't feel a need to rewatch it again. Like, I want to see Julian Bleach's scenes. Cool. But there's just nothing compelling in there. And maybe next week's episode is going to completely change my mind and make me go, wow, this was all very clever. But I don't see that. I don't see that with him. It doesn't happen with him.
I thought, you know, since the Clara and the Doctor were meant to be getting on, this episode would start with the two of them in the TARDIS, landing somewhere, and then having to deal with a situation which involves the Daleks and Missy. No. Same old, same old.
Okay, so I'm just looking at Twitter. There's a few comments and questions on there. DPevil wants to know what we think of the overnight figures. Overnight. How quaint. 4.8 million viewers, which admittedly is low for an opening episode, really, I think, isn't it? But, you know, it's the iPlayer age. Doctor Who is internationally successful. If it was similarly low in other countries as the final figure, then maybe that would be a worry. But iPlayer is going to bump it up. Delayed viewing is going to bump it up. We really don't need to be concerning ourselves with overnights. We'll leave that for the newspapers, I think. It's not really our bag anymore, overnight ratings. I'm more interested in what people think about it, not what some figures that are out of context might think about it. Because, after all, figures don't actually have thoughts, so... I mean, that's only my opinion. What about you, James? What do you think?
It does feel, like I said before, it's showing some confidence in itself. It can't... Everything has to be fast, it's bang, and constantly trying to surprise the audience. It doesn't seem to feel like it's got the confidence just to play themes with people. It almost does with Davros and the Doctor, but it doesn't do it for long enough. And it can. You've got extremely competent actors there. And the writers, regardless of what you think of Moffat, he's a brilliant writer. You know, he can come up with some really lovely scenes and dialogues. So if it just have a little more confidence in itself, just to back off a bit and just let itself breathe and play out these things. That's what the, you know, he keeps saying at the moment, you know, the benefit of the longer stories of the older series. Well, the older series, the longer stories were made out of having longer scenes because they didn't have the money to do what they do now, so scenes were longer and more dialogue-based. But if that's the charm you're after, you've got to have the confidence to play those a bit and back off and right. Let them do those scenes.
I completely agree with that, and I'm very concerned that the two-parters this season are all going to have this same feel. Lots of over-the-top scenes that have no real purpose being within the actual meat of the story. Because, you know, as we, you know, keep saying, going back to Julian Bleach's Davros, it was an incredible scene, an incredible portrayal, and an interesting kind of idea that seemed like it was trying to bud out of there. But it couldn't. It was getting buried by all this other pointless stuff. And if all we're going to do is get two-parters this season, which are just going to be essentially one-parters with a bunch of over-the-top scenes thrown in there in order to split it into two-parters, it's a waste of time. You know, you need to let the magic happen. Davros and the Doctor could have had a heck of a lot more time having grand conversations, and maybe it'll come next episode. But, you know, that was some of the best things about Genesis of the Daleks, was the conversation between Davros and the Doctor. You know, but they didn't try to overdo anything in that story, in my opinion. In this story, I just don't get half of the things that they did or why they did them, you know? I mean, I didn't mind the planes being stopped in the sky. I figured something was going on, and okay, Missy said it was a cheap party trick. You know, that's kind of fine. I don't mind that. In the Tenant era, they kind of did something like saying that, you know, crossing your own time stream was illegal unless it was for cheap party tricks. I get that, you know, Time Lords have maybe a different lifestyle or whatever, and I understand what they were trying to do with that. Fine, that was okay, but I don't know, I keep going back to the tank scene, the guitar scene, even the prequels to these stories. The one that was on Karn, I thought that's not bad. That was actually a pretty interesting prequel. They should have left it there, because when they did the other one in medieval times, I just sat there going, ah, crap, you know, all this has told me is that you haven't changed. You're doing your usual things, and that's what we have to look forward to in the episode, and sure enough, we did.
I mean, I think the episode would have worked better if they'd had the Doctor. Again, I caveat this with, you know, we haven't seen part two yet, but if they'd had the Doctor have some sort of, they've shown a scene of him, some trauma within a Dalek war that he was involved in, that spurred him to decide to go back and find Davros as a younger, perhaps he didn't mean to go back so far as a child, and then play the dilemma out and give him some sort of impetus that isn't just him stumbling upon a child that happens, he finds out to be Davros, then decides, oh, well, you know, I don't think I can help this person. What should I do? It just feels so constructed and contrived. And it just, as I say, that I think would have given it a little more, I'd have rather had some sort of opening that sort of sets the Doctor out in a Dalek war, which he was having to deal, even if it was a very closed off scene with people dying and not the extravagance of a budget, and then from that to move into the story of the Daleks rather than this long unity. To say the plane thing would have been fine in another story. In another story, I think that's a nice, interesting idea, and it would have worked well. But in this story, again, it's like sequels, isn't it? You've got to decide who your main components are, and this story felt like it couldn't decide whether its main component was, and this is unsurprising, was it Missy or was it the Daleks? And in the end, like a sequel, like Batman Returns or Batman or you know, any of the superhero movies which start compounding antagonists, it didn't really know which one it wanted to stay with. And it's like, you know, one or the other. Or if you're going to have Missy in this, bring her in simply. The dialogue she had in her when she was sitting at the table was really good. That would have been a very nice intro for her into a story, and then just bring her along in with the rest of them. So this long Gura fest for me, I don't know.
I want to give a shout out, actually, in my opinion, to the soldier from the beginning of the story that tried to save Davros as a kid.
Yeah.
He was good. And when he died, I thought, damn, what a shame. Like, I thought this was going somewhere. So I want to give major credit to that actor. And unfortunately, I don't know his name. I've only seen the story once. But kudos to him, and maybe even kudos to Ma for writing that character, but I thought that was well done, and I really thought it was going somewhere good and unfortunate.
Okay, so we're going to wind up our coverage of The Magician's Apprentice shortly, but, you know, I gave my rating earlier of 6 out of 10, so what about you guys? James and Brian, what do you think?
I don't know. It was 6 out of 10 to me denotes a story that was actually okay but not great.
And I didn't feel that way. I would maybe give it a 3 because it had good moments, but it's not a story that I would find myself going back to rewatch again. And usually that's how I would rate things. You know, would I rewatch this story? Now, granted, that'll change next week if part 2 makes me think, hey, this is a worthwhile story to rewatch again. But right now, as it is, I don't see myself revisiting the story, just revisiting a scene or two, maybe.
Okay, then that's good. James?
Well, has he given it? Did you give it a rating out of 10?
Yeah, he said 3.
Sorry. Huh. Well, if you give it a 6, and I give it a 6, I'd have given it sort of like satanic. Yeah. I don't know. I think I'll give it a 5. I'd be tempted with a 6, but since Crawley's already done 6. I can't go higher, I think, than a 6. To say the acting was good, the production was good, cinematography was good, there was some nice lines in there. I thought Miss Eve was very well written and very enjoyable, nice mix of charm and malevolence. Davros was nicely written. Unfortunately, you've got to sort of take off a lot of marks if the story just isn't well structured. And to me, it wasn't at all. So, yeah, I think I'm just going to have to take off all that and just give it a 5. Which is going to make us popular, won't it? Gov?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Listeners out there are used to us reaching this particular stage of the podcast and then moving on to the recommendations. So, you know, we're that stage at the podcast now. So let's do the recommendations. So we'll move on to our weekly recommendations. Anyone want to go first? Okay. Just in case you're new to this, this is where we give you our weekly recommendations, our thoughts and opinions on stuff that we've enjoyed. It's usually something that we've read or watched, maybe on TV or at the cinema, perhaps listened to, perhaps played. But we keep it interesting so that you've got something to, you know, do for the rest of the week, basically. Although we might just recommend The Invasion from 1969. Brian, you were here last time, weren't you? But would you like to do the recommendation anyway?
I've got nothing. I haven't been watching anything outside of the things I already spoke about in the last kind of couple of weeks that I was here. Brownies. I had a good brownie yesterday. It was very delicious. There you go.
Okay, what's your job?
Okay, that's good. Where were you?
What's that?
Where were you?
I was at the Ren Fair, the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair. It is a fair that recreates medieval times. So you go and you hang out there and in the past. It was Time Traveler's Weekend, so I went as David Tennant, as the doctor. And it was fun. They have a TARDIS there. They have a police box on the premises, so it's kind of cool. So it was a lot of fun. So I'd recommend that. I'd recommend getting out to the Ren Fair, the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair.
Do you know, I really, really like the fact that you basically brought this whole Ren Fair thing in by talking about chocolate brownies, because I absolutely love chocolate brownies. So much so that I take notes about the quality of chocolate brownies when I eat them at restaurants or if I buy them at fairs. Like, for instance, I went to a fair yesterday. I went to the Stokesley Show here in North Yorkshire. And ate a chocolate brownie there from a stall from a guy who was selling purely chocolate brownies. And, you know, people get very sort of like blasé about brownies. It seems to me that it's very easy to get them wrong because sometimes they can be too hard, they can be too biscuity, or they can be too dense and heavy. And they should be neither of those things. They should be nicely in the middle, a little spongy, a tiny bit moussey, with plenty of air in there, but soft and moist without being heavy. They shouldn't be like a biscuit. They shouldn't be like eating mud, basically. Yeah, there are other biscuits that fulfill those qualities. Chocolate brownies are not them. So I make notes, and one day I'm probably going to release a book, maybe, of the best chocolate brownies I've ever had. I don't know. Maybe I'll be the only person who buys it. Then again, knowing the Casterbus listeners, the podcast listeners, perhaps one or two of them might be interested. I'm sure they'll be really interested in your recommendation there, Brian, for a chocolate brownie. I certainly am. Interestingly enough, a few months ago when James and I met up in Norwich, we went for a coffee, and I do believe that I actually had a chocolate brownie on that day. Do you remember?
Oh, did you?
Yes, I jolly well did. And instead of pretending, like I know you're going to, that we've never met, when we have, why don't you give me your recommendation instead?
Don't I have a recommendation? Let's have a think about this. I'm going to do something different. I tell you what I have been doing. I've been playing XCOM's recent game because I've still got an old PlayStation 3 and they're crashing in prices now with the PlayStation 4 and everything. So I went and got the XCOM game that came out in 2012. And I've been rather enjoying that. So if you want a game to be recommended, then I would recommend that game. Because I'm damned if I... Oh, I know what I'll recommend. It's sitting there. Slowly, but surely. Which one could it be? Yeah, I've been watching a little bit of the War Games this week as well. In part because, as I say, writing an article which deals with Doctor Who. So, and there's some bits in the last few episodes I wanted to look at again. But it's a good story. I like the way that it sort of starts off with the Doctor and his companions coming out of a TARDIS. Not the Doctor is missing and the companions have to find the Doctor for the first half of the adventure before the adventure can get going and actually go to the bit that they're meant to be going to do, which doesn't appear till the last 15 minutes because they spend the rest of the time trying to find the Doctor. It starts off, it gets going, and it moves really well for 10 episodes. We've talked about it before, so I'm not going to go into detail, but yeah, I'd say if you want a blast from the past, which... I wouldn't say it's got a perfect structure, but certainly a different way to do Doctor Who than what we saw yesterday. And that's not to say what we saw yesterday was wrong, but it's a different way than the War Games.
Well, selecting a podcast recommendation for me this week is a little bit tricky, as I haven't really done anything of particular note, watched anything of particular note since last time, so... I'm all about Death in Heaven, onto Seuss 2 now, and that's pretty much it. And a little bit of Whitechapel. Well, I'm basically in the middle of renovations here at home, so I've just been chilling out the same things over and over again. We often find ourselves recommending the same things over and over again, which does kind of introduce a degree of redundancy into the recommendation. So if you are noticing that we're recommending something that you've already caught up on, such as Old X-Files or Millennium, or which I don't think James has recommended in a long time, but bear with me, or Ripper Street or Whitechapel or Death in Paradise, then we do apologise to you. I really can't think of anything else that would be worth recommending, really. It's a pitfall of having these recommendations on the podcast week after week, I suppose.
Well, maybe we could stop that by stop asking us to recommend things. What do you think, Brian? Do you think that's a viable prospect?
I do think that that is one way to reduce the redundancy of our recommendations.
Yeah.
Although, how would anybody ever figure out that they should watch the Indivisible?
Right.
My only concern.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for added extra redundancy there from Brian Turnover. Because that is exactly what I was building up to, and he's completely ruined my punchline. So that brings us to the end of this week's Costerbus podcast with a K. Dear listener, we're very grateful for your time. And if you were watching live, again, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and for your tweets. Until next time, when we will be discussing The Witch's Familiar, it's goodbye from us. And just a reminder to you at the end of the podcast with a K this week, we had some pretty balmy sound issues when recording the live podcast on Google Hangouts, which is why my voice sounds nice and crisp throughout the podcast, because I basically had to redo my bits. I've basically dubbed myself, although I haven't gone so far as to sort of overdub myself on the video on YouTube, because that would just be silly. And one of the end results of that is that this is a slightly shorter podcast than the broadcast version, or the webcast version. You understand. So, as I say, we'll be back next time. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.